Hello, hello. Donnie Baker's in the house. Being uncharacteristically quite the gentleman right now. Who? Donnie.
What do you mean?
He's just sitting there. He's not saying a word.
Well, Ron's not a dick.
It's called the thousand-yard stare.
I was trying to incorporate him into the podcast.
Oh, sorry.
I know Ron's not a dick.
No.
This is going to confuse me. We're going to call him Ron or Donnie.
I was saying that on the way. My kids asked what I did last night. And I said, well, I went and saw my friend Ronnie. And they said, well, what does he do? And I was like, well, he's a comedian. I said, it's Donnie Baker. And he goes, I thought you said Ronnie. I go, I did. And he goes, then who's Donnie? And I was like, fuck, never mind.
Split the difference, go with Dennis, okay? Dennis is so underutilized.
I'm
Chick
McGee.
How many muffler shops could have Dennis and make more money?
And we are off the air.
Let's do this. Hey, come on.
In the morning,
there
we go.
Nailed it.
Fucking nailed it. Got a castle in the Paris, got some sort of process, right?
I said to get you something nice, something pretty, and I did. And you liked it like that. To be so big and to be so fat.
Hi, thank you for downloading the Off the Air podcast. I am the leader, Chick McGee. Get your leader t-shirts at chickmcgee.com.
Well done. Well done. Well done.
And also at chickmcgee.com, you can order the heretofore unavailable infamous episode number 46. It's
46.
Also there. And I've listened to that a couple times now, and there are parts of that that, you know how you look at old pictures and you go, oh my God, did I look like that?
Uh-huh.
I listened to the number 46 and I go,
really?
Oh my God, did I sound like that then? Yeah, it's just...
Oh, the content?
Yeah, the content.
What you wanted to talk about.
What we were talking about, what we weren't talking about, what
I
we were talking around.
I listened to about the first 15 minutes and I was like, no.
No.
I don't want to hear anymore.
It was kind of funny though. We restarted it twice and you can tell that...
We talk about everybody in this building. I remember that part.
We do name names. If you
we
like,
do name names.
If you like behind the scenes name and names, it's chock full of that. And Donnie, you should do a podcast. Don't you think that'd be good?
I've heard people recommend that I should do it. I would call it a porkcast and make a fortune. But I don't know. There's not a whole lot that I really want to ask. When you've solved most of the world's puzzles, there's not a whole lot
That's
of seeking
true.
Of the truth.
That's true. You know, on the podcast, though, Donnie, you're not harnessed by any sort of government regulations. You could you can fucking tell it like it is, Donnie.
Right to their fucking face.
That's right. You're damn right you can. Well, that would be exciting and refreshing.
That would be. I'll definitely consider that. But I don't know if with my pager if I could process the sound the way I would want to without Pioneer speakers.
Jess and I went to see Donnie last night at a comedy club, and he did very well, as you always do, Donnie. You seem to be able to be on stage. You're very comfortable on stage performing in front of hundreds of people.
That's years of court appearances with the jury basically staring you down when your public defender don't basically do the job you pay him for. And sometimes I'll speak up and just say it myself. I've never been afraid of a judge, and a comedy crowd's no different.
But I find it you're way behind on technology too. You were telling me that you don't have a cell phone, you just have a pager.
I borrow cell phones. And Tim Wilson taught me how to use a payphone pretty good. But, yeah, my pager still gets service. The good thing is I don't have to worry and sweat like you guys worrying about NASA tracking every phone call I make and out of my cell phone bills that have resulted in 90% of the divorces in this country. I don't have that issue now.
That's
did
right.
Did you ever have a pager?
I did.
You did?
I did have a pager when they first...
Which wife gave that to you?
Which wife was that? I think of the first wife. I don't think it was the first wife.
It was between?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It was in 87, 88. Is that when
you
pagers
think so?
Were out?
Was that? I don't know. I know I got my first pager in middle school, probably eighth grade, which I don't know where the fuck I was going that I needed a pager, but.
I can't imagine how many pages you didn't return.
A lot, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, well, fuck it. I'll get back to that.
Yeah, there were my first was when my wife when
we were expecting our first kid.
Yeah.
And so I had the typical, the Papa pager, you know?
Yeah.
But that's when Crazy Mickey the Beeper King was
heck
in
yeah.
every radio station was playing these spots because mm-hmm. you go to the mall, you get a pager, you get a beeper. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you had to have one then. Or you know, it was essentially the same trend. You don't have a pager yet?
Oh, yeah. Man. But it was like the first way to text. Like texting with numbers and doing that instead of your phone
like
number.
Code or,
I love you and whatever, boobs, you know, that kind of stuff.
Boobs and hold it upside down,
right.
Shell oil. Remember
that's
that one?
It. Oh, yeah.
That's right.
773140 something, something. Hold it upside that's down. Right. It says Shell oil. As you heard, we don't have two guests on the show today. Ron Sexton started using his own voice instead of talking mm-hmm. like Donnie Baker. And that is...
We were talking about that before the show last night.
It is.
Somebody emailed the comedy club and said,
yeah.
My brother's driving up from Florida to see him. And I immediately thought, I wonder if he knows that he lives in Florida. He doesn't have to drive up here. I mean, I know you travel, but that, and he said, he's making the trip to see Donnie. But man, I was wondering if he was bringing Floyd, if Floyd might be there with him. And I was just like, however they worded it, they thought that it was three different people.
Yeah, and that's why I try to, you know, and I try to, for the sake of those few people that truly believe they're real mm-hmm. people, I don't want to ruin it. You know, it's that Santa Claus experience. You don't want to say, hey, kid, get off my lap. You know, you kind of want to stay in character for those. But it, you know, I think now, and I was very... initially, when I came up with Donnie, I was wanting to do a character that on the radio people couldn't differentiate between any other phone call that Bob and Tom would take. I
sure.
wanted it to sound and feel like a real caller
mm-hmm.
That just happened to have some clever lines on occasion. And mm-hmm. then so that's what I was very afraid when I went back to do comedy as Donnie that I would ruin it. I was really afraid that I would potentially kill it because I had created a picture in heads of people and was afraid that whatever I did on stage would disappoint them.
Uh-huh.
And initially it would. I thought you'd be fatter. I thought you'd be skinnier. I thought you'd be funnier. I thought you'd be, you know,
right.
You're funnier on the phone. And Frank Caliendo told me once early on, he's like, you have to stop being a comedian.
Yeah.
He's like, Donnie would never say by round of applause, how many of you are happy to be here? I mean, he wouldn't know. He would just say, how many of you fucking want to leave now?
Yeah.
But Frank helped me,
yeah,
and it wasn't a very comfortable conversation because mm-hmm. I mean, he was basically tearing down what I thought. I, you know, I was still getting laughs, and but
right.
I think there were more courtesy laughs or laughs of people appreciating what I was doing on the radio, but not so much on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally, it was, and then David Crow was a big help. I mean, great comedy consultant from the standpoint that he taught me a couple little tricks that made Donnie seem more real on stage, like. You know, telling a joke and then walking down. Hey, did you hear what I told her? I told her. He like mm-hmm. he doesn't realize he's on a microphone and everybody can hear.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, David Crow was a very good eye for me early on. So gradually, but it's hard for you know, for someone. You know, I do voices and try to do impressions of celebrities. And Donnie's is I'm doing an impression of someone that doesn't exist.
Right.
It's ever changing. Mm-hmm. Chick gave me the great Mom Phyllis edition. He's like, wouldn't Donnie have a Mom Phyllis that's kind of a stepmom that, you know, and
right.
And
you wouldn't call her Mom or Phyllis. It'd be Mom Phyllis.
Yeah, right. Mom Phyllis.
Yeah. The difference. Yeah.
So it's been great. You know, the whole wolf mm-hmm. fixation that Donnie has just came from being on the road and going to the truck stops and wondering who buys this crap? Who? And then, you know, you go to a mall in Des Moines, Iowa on a Saturday when you're killing time and you see who buys it.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So.
That's, in the comedy industry, you'll never see more give and take and more constructive criticism and constructive criticism accepted and not like, I mean, if you were in this office and if you're in the back of this radio station right now and you tried to criticize or, you know, help, not criticize, but hey, try it this way. If you're trying to sell whatever the fuck.
And you really
sell,
are trying to offer.
And you're really trying to offer.
Way, right.
It's still going to be taken negatively, kind of, you know, but when you're in the green room of a comedy show and you guys are giving and taking and back and forth and nobody really takes credit for it and it's just like, hey, I know this is going to help. And Tim Wilson was the best at that, to be honest. I mean, but Tim also had that way. We were talking about Joe last night where he will tell you if you fucking suck.
Yeah.
And he will say it just like that. You fucking suck.
Well,
yeah.
Tim would say that about himself. There was a stretch on the tour
mm-hmm.
where we were in some northern states, and it was tough with his accent.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, try to politely say and delicately say, Tim, I think if you start with a song, and a few of us, I think, tried it, because it's like with any other band, you know, you have these guys, you know, who sang The Land Down Under? From The Land Down Under?
Men at Work.
Yeah, and you hear them interviewed, you can't understand a thing they're saying, right. But if they sing, wow, okay, and then if you hear the song first and you hear Men at Work be interviewed, you can kind of track it.
Yeah.
And so I felt like for Tim, it would have been easier had he started on some shows with Church Leaks Off All Fist Fight and then go into his preaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved his preaching more than anybody, but there were nights that the crowd just couldn't keep up or translate. But he would come off stage and he'd say, I sucked out there today. Like like he was walking off the football field. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really similar to Spurgeon.
Yes,
we sucked at, I sucked out there today.
Mm-hmm.
But he was great in that he would be honest with me, you know, and vice versa.
Absolutely. Yeah, and he would, we talked about this on the Jimmy Pardo podcast, that it's not always the comedian or the performer's fault if the show goes wrong.
Correct.
I mean, you can have a shit fucking crowd.
Yes.
And
I didn't believe that until Pardo explained it to me. I was all, you know, the old poor workman blames his tools. You're either a funny comedian or you're not. You can't blame the audience. Mm-hmm. And what? No,
and
you absolutely can't.
Yeah, because I remember, I mean, Tim would call a crowd out in the middle of the show. You people suck.
Take your coupon and get the fuck out.
Well, Dan Davidson told me one time, early on before I did Donnie, this comedian Dan Davidson, very funny. And has he been on the podcast with you guys?
He's not yet.
Not yet.
He'd be a good one to have. But he told me one night, we got into this discussion about, is there no such thing as a bad crowd? Is there such a... He said, well, consider from their viewpoint. You get to the... You get your babysitter. You're racing to get there. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't like your seats. Maybe they're out of your beer. You're sitting too close to the stage. You're afraid you're going to be heckled.
Mm-hmm.
Now your food is late. Oh, my God. Can I eat with... So they have a lot of anxiety in terms of clubs. Theaters may be a little different.
Right.
Although we do a lot of theaters where there's no center aisle and somebody goes, oh, my God, am I trapped here? I mean, I would not really want to be in a comedy audience,
in a theater like that, where
you're stuck and you don't feel as though you have the freedom just from access to get to the aisle to go anywhere. And even in comedy clubs, I still like to sit in the back. I don't covet those front row seats. I'm glad that people do.
Right.
I don't know what we would do without them.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Feel very naked with that gap. But it was a pretty good, it opened my eyes to the road that they have to take to being a good audience. And some nights, if the staff isn't up to snuff, if traffic was bad, maybe there's another big sporting event, the people are there because they bought the tickets, even though they would much rather be at a Buffett concert, what I had to do with, you know, or whatever. There's a journey that they take where comedians need good light, they need good sound, they need it to be dark. Typically, comedy has to be done at night. It sucks
so
outdoors.
Your environment is controlled. The audience isn't.
Correct.
It's kind, you know, so I guess that's the difference. But then you have the person that goes and they're going in anticipation of heckling you. Like they think that they are adding to the show.
That's less and less for me.
Yeah.
And I think, and again, going back to Tim, he defined Donnie before I did. He said, you understand, Donnie Beichler is the heckler.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the heckler that got the mic. But I think because of that, it puts a pretty good
foot on
any potential heckling.
Yeah, has anybody ever heckled you better than you could heckle them back as Donnie? You know what I mean?
No, not really. I've got, and it's the old adage, too, if you got the microphone, they don't have a chance.
Right.
Bringing the knife to the gunfight.
Right.
But, there are some people that, my form of heckling is typically, hey, where's your boat? Hey, when's Randy going to come in? Hey, where's that boat now? So it's more requests.
I was going to say, it's not really anything. They didn't think it through. It's just, what can I say so he'll respond?
That attitude and that behavior of a person who heckles is so foreign to me. I can't. I just can't imagine the thought process that they're going to go through. You know, watch this, or maybe they don't say watch this. Maybe
they just
reflex, just blurt it out. And I just don't understand why you would. It seems, you know, a little rude.
Yeah.
I think honestly, some of them think they're contributing to the show and making you better. And because I couldn't get up in front of a bunch of people if they wouldn't talk to me, I'd be dead in the water. If I asked somebody a question. And they were like, no, I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to
exactly,
perform-
yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have anything, you know, so I'm thankful for it at sometimes, but...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess maybe that, my... Me doing that on stage, maybe some of the comedians don't like that. I've always...
Well, I don't know. I think the audience can differentiate. I think they're smart enough on most nights to know when they're supposed to be Q&A or give and take.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with who they're supposed to be able to ask questions.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, yeah. Well, I think for me, I think they... Because radio is so personal, I think they kind of do feel
they
like...
They feel like they're just they're conversing.
They're
yeah.
just, yeah, well, yeah. Oh, it's my chance to talk to Chick. This will
yes.
be great. Yeah, so I
And
I
then
guess.
You give the person the invitation, and then they take advantage of the invitation, and then
yes.
they do it for the rest of the night.
And the rest of the show.
Yeah. We were on a comedy show one time, and Christy was like, you're going to have to remove that guy in the back. And I was like, I'd do what? She was like, you're going to have to get rid of that heckler. And I was like, no, we have, like, I can find somebody. And I looked around and nobody, like, I couldn't get an usher. I couldn't get anybody. And this person was obnoxious as hell and walked back there. And it was one of those voices where you didn't know if it was a guy or a girl.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, shit. And so I stood back there and politely and kindly was like, hey, can you come back here with me? You know, I didn't know how to handle it. It could have gone a lot worse. I was scared I was going to get punched in the face.
And they actually came with you? And
Yeah. I hadn't been on the road for 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And so I was such a baby. Like, this was before Drew Hastings had made me cry and, you know, like, all those things. You know, like that thick skin that you eventually get,
yeah.
you know.
It's like that scene from Moneyball when Brad Pitt told Jonah Hill, no, you cut a guy, you tell him, here's a phone number to call, this guy will get you to your next team. Thanks for being part of the Oakland A's.
Yeah.
See you later.
Yeah.
And it's hard to be that callous.
Yeah.
I don't have those balls typically with strangers.
Right. And that's the thing is that I'm thinking they just spent their money. Like, this is probably, you know, this is an extra, this is a big night. If you're going to spend money, then mm-hmm. in whatever. And I just felt bad. And then it's just, but I'm sure there at the end of the tour, I'd have been like, hey, fucker, let's go. You know, get out. I don't know. Or had a taser. I'm not sure.
We were in a club. I'm not going to say which club, but the owner almost relished in say, hey, fucker, let's go. Asshole, let's go. You know,
screaming and yelling.
I mean, we're just like,
screaming, yelling.
Shit.
Turns out this gentleman was associated with the landlords of the building and was a prominent figure in the community.
Wow.
And it was, and oh, the backpedaling that happened after that. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, typically, comedy clubs are in such dire need for repeat customers and return
sure.
customers that they would probably, I could see them being firm but not rude about it. So that's funny that
no,
I could see that.
That it would, yeah, it was
the
like,
potential backfire would.
Right. And
else.
When we were at the Tim Wilson tribute show, I talked to Tim's wife, Deirdre, and mm-hmm. she was telling a story of all these stories that she's heard from the road. And that one time Tim had such a bad crowd that he got off stage and went to the door and started paying people, giving people their money back. So
yeah,
get the fuck out.
Yeah,
here's your
I
money.
Love it.
Get the fuck out.
He's the last cowboy mm-hmm. to walk the earth. I
wow.
mean, and he,
yeah.
you know, and he had enough respect for what he did and for comedy that didn't bother him
mm-mm.
one bit.
No,
you know,
no. Yeah, she said that he would literally hand the people their $15 and go, get the fuck out, every person. And I'm just like, oh,
take
my
your
gosh.
Tennis ball, Walker ass, and get the fuck away from here. Damn.
I don't think I, you know, this has turned into talking about Tim, but I don't think I'll ever get over this.
Mm-mm.
Him,
no.
I still, because who were we talking to? Oh, we were in the green room last night before Ronnie's show. And
with Dusty.
We were talking with Dusty, the, uh-huh. the drummer
yeah.
of the Pork Pistols. Deirdre told you that, yeah, it's just like, you know, there are certain days that
Wednesday
it's okay.
Wednesday through Sunday.
Wednesday through Sunday, she's okay because that was her life. I mean, he was out on the road and
yeah.
you can slip yourself into that. And you.
And then Sunday night comes and she's like.
You had that tweet. When you said, I just have to think that Tim's out on the road somewhere. Right
I think
now.
A lot. You said that too. Like it's
yeah.
just like you. I think you said it way before I did, and it was that. That's just kind of. But when you're a comedian, that's where everybody is.
Yes.
You don't see each other every day,
yeah.
so that's how it is. Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of live through posters sometimes. It was
mm-hmm.
help me with Chloe's name
or
from 24.
Marilyn Rice.
Yes, and I got to meet her yesterday. She was in this
mm-hmm.
station this
mm-hmm.
week, and so I was like, we'd never met, but I feel like we have because every time
yeah.
I've been at Jukebox Comedy Club in Peoria, you're a
mm-hmm.
week behind me or a week
sure.
ahead going here or there, every,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so and you kind of hear, you know, hey, how did it go last week for April Macy? Or tell her I said hi, she's going to be here next weekend,
mm-hmm.
you know, so
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's it's odd, the connection, how strong it can be, yet at a very good distance. You know, you don't really cross paths, but only in the form of posters and napkins with your name on them.
Coworkers, you know, and that you will never really work with.
Before I started hosting the shows and being out, I always thought I was really preparing myself to be backstage with some comedians and guys I really liked, but I hadn't seen them interact with other comedians. And I always thought, oh, this is going to be... They're just like, who got a TV show? Oh, he got a TV. Why didn't I get a TV show? But that's really not been the case. I mean, there are comedians who don't get along with each other, but they treat it, it's almost like a bit. I mean, and so it's not that, it's not a serious...
No, you know who's really bitter.
Yeah, and you know who's really mad and irritated with somebody, and you know who's not. And for the most part, you know, there are, you know, 20, 30 guys. We all, you know, really get along. There are those that...
You guys are planning a big trip to Las Vegas.
We're trying to go to Las Vegas, yeah.
Ron, are you in on this?
Oh, man, when Chick told me Stanhope was in on this, Never been to Vegas
at all. You fucking go to Vegas with Doug Stanhope. How can you not go?
I think I need to do this.
You have to go.
You've got to.
I need to get a living will first.
Oh, my God. Can we hire a camera crew?
You know what? That is really, and it's really close, too, as you're listening to this.
Chick, will you wear one of those cameras on your head?
GoPros.
GoPro. Yes. Oh, my God.
No, that's very tempting. And it had gotten put aside from last year. But it's almost July, and September's...
Do you go for the draft? Yeah, what is it?
Well, the way we just... Chad and I, Daniel, started talking about it, he said, well, we need to go out there for the opening NFL. And I was like, well, you know, everybody kind of does that. Let's go on an off week.
Yeah.
And we can watch college football on Saturday, NFL football on Sunday, and it won't be quite so crowded because it's just like week 6 or week 4 or whatever it is.
Right.
And then we'll fly back on Monday, you know, so...
That's crazy.
I don't know.
That could happen.
We should have a sponsored trip. One of those airlines step up.
Where's Napa?
That's right.
They got all that money left over from the Bahamas trip, right?
Jess and I went to Vegas to the South Point, which isn't actually in Vegas.
It's like old Vegas,
outskirts.
Right?
No, it's like.
I don't know.
Metro Vegas. You take a highway about 20 miles from the Strip, and that's where the South Point is, and that's where they still host the Muscular Dystrophy Telethon. And we went out there to see a friend of ours at the time. And
stop it. We saw Bob Zaney. They're not speaking anymore.
Oh, really?
That's not true.
Bob was at Bugsy's and didn't call either of us. That's 10 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
Fucking, he stayed at my house.
Bob's gone Breaking Bad a little bit.
What happened?
I don't know. I think he's...
Have you heard from him?
I talked to him, I don't know, about a month ago or so, but it's odd. It's like he's on the road, you know, on the lam and kind of checking in. But
yeah.
Well, he Hollywooded me about 2 weeks ago.
On the air.
He was doing the Zany Report.
Random Zany.
And he goes,
report.
Hey, Bob, Tom Christie, how are you? And they all go, okay. And I'm sitting right here. And he goes, oh, hey, Chick, we need to talk at some point or something. You know, like, or we need to have lunch or something like Hollywood. You know, like,
let's talk, I
Bob,
think that's what he said.
You know?
Yeah.
He stayed at our house when we were together. He stayed at my house. After that, he was like a brother, and I don't know what's happened. I don't know what I did.
I'm, like, getting on the interstate, you know, and going to the mall or whatever here, and I drive by Bugsy's, and it's fucking Bob Zaney, Bugsy's, with what's his name?
Chris Bowers.
With Chris Bowers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Didn't know about it until I saw it on the sign.
He's
running like Vito did. Maybe he was caught in a very delicate situation. At a construction site. Jesus
Vito
Christ.
Was going down. Oh! That's my favorite scene. The wise guys can understand, you know, if you're getting your dick sucked, you're getting your dick sucked. You're not sucking dick. Oh, jeez. Well, wait a minute.
I revote, Christopher.
Yeah, that son of a bitch. I don't know. Maybe we'll go to Vegas. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah,
but my point was that story was I've never seen her so miserable in my life.
Really?
We were staying at the MGM, but everywhere. She has this superpower that she can feel emotions of other people before they happen. I mean, just looking at them. It's weird.
Oh, whatever. Those are called cramps.
But she was like so affected by walking through the lobby and seeing these people, obviously, who are there. I have no business gambling, let alone hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, that was the thing, is that it's a it's a depressing place. But then you walk out to the pool and there's cabanas and boobies and drinks,
that's
and you're like,
part.
"Fuck yeah, this is. I'm not going in there. Yeah. I'll stay out here."
When we were in the pool, that was a good.
That was the best time. Yeah. And then we drank. Oh God, we drank so much. Where Bob performed, Bob did a show somewhere. He did a show at a really old hotel.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The night before it was being imploded. What? Yes, right. Literally, the night before.
It's way off the strip. I want to say.
Is that symbolic?
I know, right?
It was called Grecian Nights or something, but it was old Vegas.
Yeah, and it was old Vegas, and you went in there, and it was like, I mean, it was full of, you know, old souls. I don't know. But we were there, and so after the show, we're sitting there and we're playing poker at the bar on one of those machines, the old TV things, and drank so many fucking Bloody Marys.
And then you went back to the room.
I went back to the room and proceeded to puke all over the, I mean, it looked like a murder scene.
Because,
they're just Bloody Mary everywhere.
Yeah,
everywhere.
It was funny.
It was terrible. It was not funny.
It wasn't
funny.
Funny
is the opposite of what it was.
So then, Bob and I sat down in the bar and drank until 2 and 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got to go to Vegas.
And I could have been dead in the room.
Now that'll help me with my Elvis fix, too. I'm such an Elvis fan.
I finally
got to Graceland about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago.
Did you tear up?
No.
You didn't?
No, even my youngest kid, Aaliyah, she was, I don't know, 4 or 5 at the time, and she was bright-eyed.
Yeah.
And going through the house with the tour, you wear headphones, and you hear, I mean, we about got thrown out when she hopped on Lisa Marie's playground.
Uh-oh.
And yeah, oh my God, yeah. But, but no, I just, those were some depressing years for the King. And he was doing, it's funny, 2 and 3 nights a show when you're, two or three shows a night in your Elvis, and how hard they worked him at the International Hotel. But I'd like to go check some of that, like the old Vegas stuff out and see. And I'm a sucker for good Elvis impersonators. I love that stuff too. So
I thought of you the other day. I turned off the it's dish at our house, and so we have like the rabbit ear whatever thing you need now for regular TV, but I can't remember what station it is, but it's like all old stuff, like All in the Family is on there, and Blue Hawaii was on
other day,
and I made the kids watch it, and they were just like, what the fuck is this? Yeah.
The
but they did
bad.
Like All in the Family. So we've been watching that lately.
I get so much. I do so much on the air from Carol O'Connor. Get away from me. That's Archie.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, Mark, whatever is Archie. Edith had a reverend. His name was Reverend
Felcher.
Mm-hmm.
And but Archie would go, you tell that. No. Yeah. You tell that Reverend Fletcher. I said, it's Felcher. He goes, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the show's on now, but I don't think a show could come on and be like that.
There's no way in hell.
It was the episode where she's getting ready to have the baby.
And she loses that.
They don't.
I really remember that episode.
She doesn't have a baby?
No, she loses the baby. Gloria loses her baby.
Does she really?
Yeah.
This is the baby shower.
No,
this
Gloria
before...
loses the, yeah.
Are you serious?
Archie comes in. She's in the hospital room.
Are you okay right now?
No. No, and he goes, you know, you'll always be my little girl. You know that.
Shut the fuck up.
Fuck. You want to vomit and cry at the same time? Watch that episode.
Well,
and
good
she's
thing
like,
we missed the next
she's
one.
She's like, oh, Daddy, I'm sorry. I made a mistake or messed up or something. Oh,
oh my
yeah.
God.
It had to be one of those that was to be continued leading up to. I mean,
well, yeah, because this is just the baby shower. Like, it's not like she isn't getting ready to have the baby. It's the baby shower.
It was the first time. Hell, I don't know. It was 75, 74. So I was, 17.
Oh, my God.
It was the first time I loved this comedy. And I think that's why I love that type of comedy now that can. It's funnier than hell, but then they rip
next
your heart
minute.
Out and show it to you. Yeah.
When is the last show that did that?
Oh, God. I don't know. You know, Modern Family tries with the little voiceover at the end.
No, but it always ends really well. I mean, there's that someone lost their child. Like, when has that happened in an episode?
I can't remember. I know not on network, what you would call network television, ABC, the major ABC, NBC, CBS. But.
I remember I didn't, I mean, obviously I didn't. If you were 17 when it was, I didn't watch it. But I remember, we watched a lot of Cheers. My dad always watched Cheers and Night Court. those were like the two shows that I grew up and was like, that's fucking funny. And even if I didn't know what I was laughing at the time, you know? And I don't feel like my kids are going to have those shows.
Yeah, I agree.
They're not.
As far as sitcoms go, there's yeah. very little.
You know, I just went through that with my the mom of my two youngest kids. And she and my youngest daughter just went to Europe for 10 days or whatever. And she was dismayed at the fact that all my daughter wanted to do was she would take they took a picture of my daughter on the beach, and it took like 20 minutes or whatever. And it's the old why even go somewhere if what you're going to do is you're so busy about recording the moment you don't experience
the moment. Jim Gaffigan did a whole thing about that, about being, you know, move your phone and have the memory. Watch it happen, you know.
That's what Olbermann says. Hey, world's out here, pal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. And she, I love my baby girl, but she's, you know, but it's what that age group does. It's Instagram, it's Twitter, it's Facebook. Yeah. It's
mm-hmm. And it is sad. I mean, I coach high school baseball now, and if you go to any game, it doesn't have to be a high school game, mm-hmm. but it can be travel, it can be rec league. Most parents miss those moments because they're trying to figure out how to record, mm-hmm. Any number of gadgets, messing with their mm-hmm. phone, or they're texting. They assume, well, I got time between pitches to finish this conversation, and then they mm-hmm. miss the grand moment.
Miss the moment, yeah.
And it is it is a different age. I mean, you know, we're in an mm-hmm. age where you see four teenagers walking down the street and they're all texting, and yet, you know, there's a great opportunity to have a bond or actual conversation between four people, but that's mm-hmm. how they do it. And I think, you know, to think that that's going to be reversed is wishful thinking.
Right.
But it also worries me that when it comes time for these people to have a job interview, mm-hmm. I don't think that's ever going to change. You're not going to text your way into employment.
No.
So at some point you have to have a conversation face to face.
You have to have social skills.
Yes.
Social skills.
Costanza, like as Costanza says, we live in a society where you're supposed to be nice to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I don't.
But it's true.
But if you think back on it, like my dad's at that point in his life where his kids are raised. Like my youngest sister just graduated high school. She's going to college. And my dad is finally like, fuck yes. You know, I mean, that's a 15-year age gap between us. And so he starts going through stuff and he's like, hey, here's this box of shit I've been carrying around for the last 20 years. I don't know if you want it. And it's like the dress I was baptized in and some dance recital stuff and my first pair of tap shoes and some Easter dresses and, you know, just some random stuff. And I'm looking through this. I'm like, this is great, you know? And it made me think, okay, stop for a second. There's a ton of things that happened that my dad probably has the memory of that I'm not going, well, I don't have that memory. I don't have that picture. I don't have that dress. And so it's my kids aren't going to look back at my Instagram account and go, why didn't you take a picture of that?
Yeah.
You know, that's not the case. And I'm just like, okay, let me carry some of these things around in my heart, and my kids aren't going to go back and go, well, you didn't put this on Facebook. Why didn't you change your status when we were at that baseball game?
And, exactly.
You know, so it's, you know, to take that moment and that breath and to go, okay, we're here. Let's be here as a family right now.
I still hate myself to this day. And you got to meet my baseball hero, Eric Davis.
About a month ago. Yeah, about a month ago. He was couldn't have been nicer.
And in 1990, game one of the World Series, I luck into a pair of tickets. And the Reds were major underdogs in this series. They're playing the world defending world champion Oakland A's. And my neighbor wanted to go with some buddies. And he said, if you take my kids, I got to. Well, hell yeah, I'll take your kids. I was in college at the time. And so we go to Cincinnati, and the seats were way up, cookie cutter stadium, upper deck, mm-hmm. right field. And
please tell me this is the game where Canseco got hit in the head.
No, it wasn't. It was close. That happened, I think, in game two.
Oh, okay.
But Eric had been struggling coming into he had a pretty good year that year, but through injuries and then just hit a slump leading into the NLCS against Pittsburgh. So he's facing Dave Stewart, and I'm just deathly concerned that he's going to be Stewart through gas. And so I have these binoculars, and I just want to see how late he is mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. Dave Stewart's fastball. And I'm like, I have these binoculars trying to watch. And so there's the pitch, and I hear a crack of the bat, and I completely miss his home run. Oh. I mean, I was there, and I felt it.
Right.
And I got to see him run the bases. Right. But in terms of seeing him actually make contact with the ball, and it was a rocket. It was out of there instantly. But it's I still, to this day, so when with my kids now, if we're at a game, now put the phone down, put the camera down, because I regret having missed that, and I was there. And even though it wasn't any way to capture it, it was just binoculars, but it was
Well, that's the thing, too, is that you're with those people and say that there's a big, you guys are at a Major League Baseball game and there's something, you know, monumental that happens there. You and your kids are going to share that moment for the rest of your lives, and you're going to be able to look at each other and go, remember when?
We were there. When,
as opposed to on your camera or whatever and sharing it with a bunch of fucking people you don't know.
Like the lady last night at the show that was at Elvis's last concert in Indianapolis, Indiana.
My mother was there.
Really? See, I would love to talk to her, too. I just, I'm fascinated
by that. There's some pictures. Here we go. There's pictures of that him on Twitter of his last show at Market Square. And Elvis looked great.
Yeah.
No, I'll find them. My mother has the pictures that she had developed. It was her and it was their whole family went. Her brother and her sister and everybody. And her mom and her dad. And she has pictures. And it's insane, the pictures. I mean, like, they're like probably 10 rows back.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd love to see those.
Yeah, I'll find them. It was nuts. Because I don't want you to have to talk to her.
I talked to her fine just last week. We had a lovely conversation.
Yeah, congratulations to my little sister, Jordan, and my new brother-in-law, Dylan. My sister got married on Saturday.
Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah. It's adorable. Yeah. First marriages are really cute, so this will be fun.
That was a lovely wedding.
It was a lovely wedding. Yes. It was good.
They had chicken from Copper Kettle.
Copper Kettle is great. I had many, many family meals at Copper Kettle.
Yeah. What about, did you ever go to Bluebird? I mean, it's right down the street.
Bluebird.
Do you remember that?
Is the Bluebird shut down now?
Well, it caught on fire.
Never been there.
No, and
we used to go there all the time. We'd call it chicken. You want to go chicken tonight?
Really?
Yeah, let's go have chicken tonight.
Fried chicken, but yeah, it's a buffet, and yeah, it caught fire. But they reopened it, I think, for Mother's Day. That's when they came back.
And the old joke about that, of course, Ronnie, is that was weird. That fire was not supposed to be until 2 weeks from now. So, yeah, one of those. But I'm sure that's not the case.
No, I think it started in the bar next door, and there was.
So are you doing what you I've seen you excited a lot, and I've known you for a long time. I've never seen you more excited than when you were telling me that you. Got the head coaching job for the high school baseball team.
I love it. I mean, it's if I died today, I have no complaints because I never intended to coach high school baseball, but I love it. You know, and last year I had a chance to coach both of my sons, and then my hope is that I'm there long enough that they get to come back and help. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I could be fired next week. You know, it's high school athletics is not going down a good road.
Right. So I can't imagine. It's got to be intense because
do you think it's because of all of the travel teams and the extracurricular and all that stuff?
No, most school systems are broke.
Yeah.
There's less and less money. I mean, our booster club has to – we have a very odd situation, but we don't really have a home field. And so the Toronto Blue Jays provide our home field, but the insurance is so expensive that we have to do so much fundraising just to even practice or play on their spring training field.
Is your wife running the boosters for the high school?
Yeah, she was running the booster club before I was.
Oh,
the
really?
Coach.
Okay.
Yes. But it's so sad because it's the one thing that schools are cutting out. I forget, there was an HBO Real Sports episode, a massive high school somewhere in Ohio that had to basically lock the gates to the football stadium. And the football stadium was gorgeous, state-of-the-art stadium, but they didn't have the funding. So sadly, I mean, I think that it's...
So what did it cost for Eric to play baseball?
I mean, with fundraising and stuff, we basically, and it varies each year. Before I was the coach, there was... they had 32 kids on the team, and again, another odd situation. We don't have junior varsity baseball. But the kids were kind of expected to raise or come up with about $400 to $600 a piece. And if you didn't do it, you didn't do it, because some other kids would raise $1,200, which would essentially make up the difference. But
really?
Car washes and this and that. Yeah.
Well, you didn't.
That's high school baseball. But what about, when you guys were traveling, travel teams and stuff, that's a lot more money.
Absolutely. And it wasn't so much, you take gas money and hotel money out of it that you don't really even bank on.
And
that just kind of comes with it.
And a massive amount of time.
Yes, tons of time.
I mean, you're out of school at Friday afternoon and you hit the road. And
yes.
You, oh.
But
I can't
it was, you know, we were a baseball family trapped in a basketball state.
Yeah.
Part of the reason for the move was, you know, we would spend 7 months a year at some tunnel with indoor, outdoor grass, you know, renting a tunnel for $50 to do batting practice.
Bat barn.
A bat cave.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had, ours was the bat barn, the ball barn. I don't fucking know.
And New
Pal.
The
ball barn and did that. And it's just like, I mean, I get it because my brother was that way. We drove all over the place for him to have pitching lessons and this and that. And it was just, we were always somewhere for something. And I have no idea how much money my dad ended up shelling out over the course. I mean, and you've got three boys.
Two boys, two girls. But my oldest three all play.
They're
at
all
one point
okay.
Did travel sports and I'll play high school
okay.
Softball or baseball. But yeah, it's sad. You know, I went back to just seeing friends and family back here this week. My little league where I played. I mean, it's a very depressing place now. Wanamaker Little League, Franklin Township.
Oh, I know exactly where you are.
They didn't have enough kids to sign up. I mean, it's just rec ball, but they didn't have enough kids to sign up to even have the Little League parade that was a mm-hmm. major staple of that community for years.
Is that at 74 and Post?
Yes.
Is it right there?
Yeah, and it hasn't changed a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, there are still kids that play there, but travel is almost defeated and depleted that entire program. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to come to a point when travel will price families out of that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I have a nephew right now that plays on the Indiana Bulls. And mm-hmm. it is right now, we're in late June. He's covered. They've been to 8 different states. And mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, it's going to become impossible to afford this.
Right.
And it becomes not a case of trying to assemble the best players or top players like a program like the Bulls would do. It becomes who is qualified and has the gas money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that those rec leagues will eventually – it'll come back around to where affordability will be the primary qualifier in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
But we had great experiences, though. Our kids got to go to Cooperstown, and that's part of living, too. You know, I don't regret it. I mean, Cal Ripken has a great complex that's basically designed for that experience.
Yeah.
And even – you know, it doesn't even have to have a travel team with it. You have communities that'll take their top all-star team or
mm-hmm.
half their all-star team will merge with another and go have a trip. And so there are a lot of great places to go see, but it can be very pricey.
Right. Mm. And we had a group of parents who did the travel league and they did all that last summer. And then just kind of as a group, like half of them said, you know what, we're going back to the youth league. Like we had fun. It was a half a mile from the house. And a lot of them were just, they broke off and were like, our kids aren't having fun anymore on the road. And then you have your parents, your extremists who just will wreck it for everybody.
Yeah. And that's where I think, looking back on it, if I were to do it again, I don't think that there would be. I mean, I blush when I look back on the way I acted as a coach with 10 and under baseball and sitting at B-dubs. Hell, if Billy would have just gotten a damn base hit, we'd all be satisfied.
Right, he's going to wake up tomorrow. He's going to be 4.
He's going to be 4 years old. Get your pull-ups on. Get out there and play. Act like you know how to do this.
Well, everybody remembers the dad that got tossed out of the baseball game in Little League. You know, I still know the guy's name that got kicked out of a softball game when I was in the 4th grade.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it. Never forget it.
And well, going back to Tim Wilson, I get a call one day. Tim's son, Ari, was probably 10 or 12 years old at this time. And Tim knew how much I love baseball, and I was coaching travel ball at this time. And he said, can I pick your brain for a second? And he tells this story of Ari is not on deck, but he's in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach's wife is kind of the dugout mom, and she's keeping the book on a clipboard. Well, Ari is 10, and he's talking to somebody in the dugout, and the mom takes the clipboard and taps him on the head. Now he's wearing a helmet, and she goes, you pay attention to the game! And she taps him on the head, and that was Tim's impression of this mom.
Right.
Oh, my.
And so Tim's standing in the back, and you remember the cowboy hat and the trench coat.
Right.
Sure.
This is during that time.
Right.
And he goes, ma'am, did I just say you hit my little son on the head with a clipboard?
Oh, my God.
And she goes, yes, I did. He wasn't paying attention to the game.
And he goes, well, ma'am, if I ever see you tap my son on the head with a clipboard again, I'm going to knock your fucking teeth out. Well, her husband's coaching third base right by the dugout. And Tim goes, well, next thing you know, I'm out there on the damn field with a 5-day beard holding court, and they think I'm a drunk at the Little League. The cops show up.
Oh,
I just got
to
hide shaved in about 6 days. And Tim's out there preaching. But can you imagine the scene?
Oh,
you know,
no.
And so sadly, it is, you know, and
You know what, though? But this lady, not to defend her, but this lady, her frame of reference probably is, remember there was a time when if you misbehaved,
anybody,
you're open seas. Anybody's parents can yank you up or flip you on the back of the head. Or, what the fuck are you doing? Or what? Yeah. That you were. It was fair game.
My dad always said that. He said, "You know, if you get in trouble at school, because I remember it was probably first or second grade where you stopped getting whippings at school.
Right.
For me, that's what grade I was in. But if you got sent to the principal's office, which I did twice before the second grade, so that's probably bad. Mm-hmm. But my dad would say, if you go to the principal's office and you get spanked there, know that that's your first spanking.
Yes.
You're going to get home, and it's going to be twice as bad because you got in trouble.
That's a major thing that's missing, sadly, because you do get repeat offenders because there's not a price to pay at the end. Or there are so many excuses, or kids are coddled a lot more.
Oh, and the parent, the parents are usually the ones making the excuses. Yeah. It's not the kid trying to defend themselves and get out of the situation. Then you have a parent that says, "Oh, no, 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 I can defend you better than you can defend yourself." So you're going to have no skills at all to deal with people.
I'm just constantly amazed, by some parents who, no matter what the child has done, they are so quick to. And I'm because I come from. You know, hang on, that's my phone. I certainly come from, there was a lot of physical correction, I guess, in my home. And I would never, I just didn't because I tried to, whatever, break the cycle or whatever you want to say.
Sure.
But parents are so quick to defend their kids no matter, and they're not doing the child a service.
Oh, my God.
You know, I got a great example.
Helping the kid,
I had a situation this year. We most days we'd have batting practice about 4 o'clock on game days.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a young man who was tardy and struggled with, and I even told him, I said, before you read pitches, you need to learn how to read a watch. I mean, the kid really struggled with keeping time. He was a good kid, but he was late more than a few times.
Right.
And I get a text. Everybody said, "Where's so-and-so?" And I get a text, and he says, "Going to be late. My dad forgot to wake me up from my nap." Now, this is a junior in high school.
Oh.
High school baseball. He made the team at a prominent baseball. My dad forgot to wake me up. And first of all, I'm thinking, why didn't you lie? There could have been a million perfectly good lies. Car trouble. I'm sick. I don't feel well. Mm-hmm. And so the smart ass in me, I was like, well, the last thing I want you to do is rush to get here. It sounds like you need rest. You're not dressed in the night, so take another nap. And the father goes ballistic and gives me, he's like, "Why do you punish my kid for my mistake? I was supposed to wake him up for his nap." And I'm thinking, you are missing the boat here.
You're missing the whole fucking point.
I mean, anywhere else you would think, or any other kid, I would think, "Oh, this is a joke. My nap."
Well, it's like that commercial where the mother is at the school with the kid who's playing dodgeball, and she's got the dodgeballs out in front of him, protecting not letting him dodge.
The helicopter mom. Yeah, is what they call it. Yeah. Man, any time that we would, something would happen at school, or, "Dad, I don't think this teacher likes me," or, "Why doesn't she like you? What did you do?" It was my dad did not defend us one bit. It was always like, "You need to consider what you did to make this person react this way." Sure. And I was like, "Fuck." So for the rest of my life, I carried around. I'm like, "This is probably my fault, so fuck it.
Doesn't matter." There can be teachers and coaches that are pricks. And
I get it. But then my dad's like, "Figure it out. Yes. I'm not fucking calling school."
Because the lesson here is that it's not going to end here. You're going to have a job one day where your boss is going to be a prick and on and on and on.
Oh, you got to play the game.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's wrap up here.
You want to ask some questions?
Donnie.
Okay.
With some questions from the folks on Twitter. Let's see. Who is your Tawny Catane, Donnie?
My Tawny Catanes, if I think back, in real life, it would be Angel Skinner's, because when she got her hair dyed black, she had a side underbite, and she let her bangs down and sort of look like that girl that's a lead singer for the Black Crowes. She was fire ass hot. I've had a few Tawny Catanes through the years, but Angel Skinner's would have to be the most unknown. As far as famous Tawny Catanes, let me think. Probably lead singer of the Bengals.
Susanna Hoffs?
And I don't know if it's because she's so hot or the rest of the band members look like Larry Bird with bangs, but I would attempt to do her dog fashion.
Good answer, Donnie. Let's see. Why did you, Donnie, puss out and not kick Tom's ass the other day?
I have a restraining order in two different states. The fact that this is a national syndicated radio show means that even if I make a threat and with my hands being registered downtown, mm-hmm. even so much as giving the finger could be qualified as a threat. And not to mention, Tom looked sort of fucking feeble, and I felt sorry for him. He looked feeble. He's hurting, Linda.
That's so inside, but I love that line. Really? Dwight Yoakam mastered cinema with that.
Sling Blade.
Yeah, I'm hurting, Linda. I'm hurting, Linda.
Okay, Dwight Yoakam telling his wife the band's coming over for practice.
Right, for
go.
Practice, yes.
Oh, doll, I'm just tuckered out. I'm warning. Oh, hell, Linda, all you got to do is fetch you some ice, put some chips in a bowl. Come on, Morse. Uh-huh. I love that buzzer. Come on, Morse. Yeah. Doll, I'm just spent. She's worked two jobs that day. Feet are swollen. Doll, I'm just spent. I'm tuckered out. Oh, hell, Linda, all you got to do is. Yeah. I can't do Dwight Yoakam, but God,
I love Dwight Yoakam.
And the one guy with the wheelchair. Yeah.
Hey!
He's the writer. Dwight throws him out of the band meeting's over. Get out! Yeah. Throws him out of, off the porch yeah. on the, in his chair.
Get the fuck out, you stupid buzzer!
Oh, God, that was great. God.
Hey, Donnie, is Mom Phyllis available for private parties?
I swear to God she is. I'll make sure of it.
Okay. What would a conversation sound like between Floyd, Kenny, and Donnie?
Uh-oh.
I don't think you guys have ever been in a conversation together, have you?
Well, he's kindly uptight when I try to talk to him, but he needs to stay off the Red Bulls.
Well, you have enough gravy in you, your gizzard's going to be clogged for years, Dick, so I don't think I'd be talking about my health condition.
Hey, we just landed! I'm late into the conversation, but if it's health food, trust me, and I will get that on Delta, not between the peanuts and the biscuits. I know.
I don't think it'd be a very good conversation.
I will never forget, where were we? And we were waiting for a plane, and we're there at the gate, and this guy.
When you see the guy.
The guy mm-hmm. is with the Bluetooth mm-hmm. and walking around, and mm-hmm. I remember you yeah. and I looked at each other, and you go, I'm going to go listen to this.
Right? Yeah, I did. Yeah. I love, it's one of my favorite things in traveling mm-hmm. is the looking for the celebrity lookalikes or mm-hmm. just finding real people and that fit the characters. And
I
stuff.
Bet you $20 that if you found out, oh, that's the guy who does Kenny Tarmac, I love that
yeah,
bit.
Yeah,
where,
exactly.
Where do you get your ideas?
Yeah. Right, this guy right, had right. a pinstripe suit, and he was, you could tell he went from the gym to a sales meeting.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The Bluetooth, maybe two Bluetooths, but he's walking around. Imagine J.R. Ewing with his hat off in an office, and he's screaming yep. about some oil deal gone bad, but he's walking around a gate that was not servicing a flight at that time, mm-hmm. but treating it like it was his SkyRise office.
Right, right.
And all these hand gestures, it was fascinating. But yeah, I went over to eavesdrop.
Yeah.
And I picked up a few things. I heard, you're the last guy with the best lie.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, you're the last guy with the best lie. That's why you win. And there was something else he said.
Oh, my God.
But there was a lot of sales. And I have such venom for that whole sales world.
Right.
Because
yeah,
I
yeah,
failed.
Yeah.
It's, you know, everybody mm-hmm. probably in life is going to have a job where they have to sell something. And I remember maybe the most profound thing I've ever come up with as a brainless dolt was telling a friend, in sales, even when I tell the truth, I feel like I'm lying to people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that sums up my sales experience.
Yeah.
And that's why I never want to do sales again. But I was like, no, come on, man. It's a really good deal. I'm serious. I still felt like I was lying.
You still feel, yeah. That's so.
And good for those that can do it. You know, right. My dad sold cars for 30 years and was really good at it. But mm-hmm. I think it's because he didn't try to sell.
Yeah. You know? It also depends on who you're buying from.
Yes.
You're not just buying a product. You're buying a relationship.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
That's why I like the people at Dreyer Reinbold.
Dreyer Reinbold BMW. If you'd like to go tell them that the mm-hmm. Off the Air podcast crew sent you, that would be great.
That's so funny.
Hey, Donnie, do you and Angel Skinner still hit it?
We hit it. We have had good. They're called one hitters because I don't always go back. See, we had about a 4-month break when, you know, this process, vaginal rejuvenations, where women try to steam clean through the core.
Uh-huh.
Well, she basically did the same thing, and she had a shop vac and Vicks Vapor Rub, but she wasn't trying to cleanse from the core. We were trying to retrieve a class ring and sweatband that me and Scotty Winkler lost at a turnabout dance in circa 1998. We got the ring, some paper clips. It basically looked like we gutted a shark when we were done with it, but we never got the sweatband back. So I wasn't going back because I don't want to. There's a sweatband up there. I don't want to give my dick turf toe because she can't keep a good inventory.
Donnie, what would be on the Ultimate Pork Pistols mixtape?
Oh, there's a lot of good stuff. We Pork Pistols practice, there's such a wide range because our bass player looks like the lead singer, a Weezer with a rat tail. Our drummer's got longer hair than Crystal Gayle's. And Scotty Winkler is my best friend and a natural-born badass. But we would have a lot of rat. There would probably be a rat block party, tons of rat Ozzy, and, of course, white snakes. Oh, if we're practicing on the Sabbath.
Sure.
It's Nick has to be the coolest guy I've ever met.
Oh, he is cool because he doesn't try to be.
It's so weird, and he's so oblivious, and that's probably the thing. But being on the road and traveling with you guys and just witnessing the groupie dynamic sometimes, but women are just drawn to him.
Oh, yeah.
And he could give a fuck less.
Yeah, well, he told me, we talked about that once about guitar player and why women love guitar players. And he's like, Ronnie, it's real simple. It's because I'm not paying attention to them. It looks like my fingers are fucking this guitar and they're jealous, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's same with Slash. I got to see, we had a week with the Pork Pistols in Sturgis, and our big prize was to see Slash and Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators up close front row.
Yeah.
But you'll see these women, and the whole time, you know, and you could see under his sunglasses, his eyes are closed, and it almost looked like a heroin addict the moment the needle hit the vein, because mm-hmm. he was in his element, mm-hmm. and like he had nodded off, but the whole time, the fingers are just shredding.
Yeah.
And women are, oh my God, look at me, why do you want to fuck your guitar? What are you gonna mm-hmm. It drives them nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I played Centipede, my fucking palm, it took a radar gun to read this palm, and Angel and Patty would be at the ball return, and we're just amazed I'd be so immersed at a game that was nothing more than involved an angry worm, and it drove him nuts.
My gosh. You know, nothing upsets women more when you don't flirt back.
I know it, yeah, but I think that is the key for guitar player,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, Ronnie, as always, thank you.
Oh, God, thank you guys. Love the podcast. And again, I still listen to the Tim Wilson one over and over and over,
yeah.
And I know it went down the Ted Bundy road, but it warms my heart. When I get a little misty, and it still hasn't hit me, but when I miss him, I go back and listen to that, because when he talked about being the king of eating pussy.
Oh, my God.
I have been on the road with this man
the
countless
never,
hours.
The first
I,
one.
You no never, idea. I know. It just came out of nowhere. Yeah. Nowhere.
I think that's episode 70. That was the we were lucky enough to get him then.
And that's how it starts.
And that's
like
how
right out
start,
of the gate.
We start talking
about
it.
Oh, he even said, no, nah, I'm serious. I basically invented.
I basically invented it. I'm very good, or something. I don't know what it, yeah.
Yeah, and I was just, I mean, I was sitting right here, and I was just, I mean, my mouth was open.
I think you said, all right.
Yeah, I did not expect it. Yeah. I did not see that one coming at all.
Yeah, he was something else.
God, that's funny.
All right. Thank you, Jess.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you for downloading the podcast. Go to chickmcgee.com for stuff. Go to Donnie Baker.
ShutUpRandy.com.
ShutUpRandy.com.
Hey, can I get a tape of this, too?
You can. You certainly can. And look for Bob Schneider in a city near you. He's on his tour in the Midwest. And thanks again. We'll talk to you later. Ass moving so fast, can't they? Big buzz bouncing up on the sink. I wish you was here, but I can't be sure. The night's all black, everything's blurred. Got my jacket on, smoking, looking like juice, honey, on the table, and my shit's all I'm saying. Ain't got no dough, all got my balls.